Greetings, and welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the pub where friends get together for a pint and have a discussion about our favorite RPGs. After a couple week break, thanks to Easter and PAX East, the gang's back together to discuss a game that many of us would consider maybe the greatest RPG of all time. But before we get into that, let's go around the table and introduce who's on the panel tonight. So we've had to pull him away from his brand new Nintendo Labo kit. He's the busiest man in podcasting right now, Mr. Casey Gibson.
Howdy ho. Yeah, I had to put down my Labo fishing pole. As enjoyable it was to catch those fishes, I was more than ready to talk a little Chrono Trigger tonight.
Cool. And our other panelist tonight, we had to pull him away from editing reviews. And while all the time he's planning the arrival of his firstborn, he's the owner of Nintendo World Report, Mr. Neil Ranahan.
Hi, I'm right now. I have Eternal Edge. John Raritan's review of that game is open in another tab. I will likely be editing that review right after we record this, so we'll see what goes up first: John's review of Eternal Edge, which came out like 2 weeks ago on Switch, or the Thirsty Mage about Chrono Trigger. I don't think Eternal Edge. It does not appear to be worthwhile of doing a Thirsty Mage episode on. It's like an action RPG with blocky voxel graphics, I believe. Also, I got a recliner for my baby's room, which it's a glider too, so like I can like go relax in that and rock and go back and forth to and fro. So I'm pretty stoked about that. We also got a dresser for the child by going to a thrift store where we got a baller dresser for like $25. So I'm riding high. Ready to talk about the second best game with Chrono in the title.
Shots fired already.
That's right. Yeah. We haven't even started talking about it. Shots fired already.
Yeah, but I love Chrono Trigger. My troll comments about how much I like Chrono Cross aside, Chrono Trigger's great.
Well, before we get into the talk, how about we find out what we're all drinking tonight? So I'm pretty sure, based on previous experience, that Mr. Gibson has some form of aqua.
Yeah, your designated driver here once again. I did have a nice Red Bull before. I was feeling a little tired. Sort of chug along with Labo in South Park. And I had to get ready, so I've got the 12 ounces of Bull down. And now I'm on to some icy cold water.
And Neil, what do you have on the tap tonight?
So I actually have something. We talked about PAX East earlier. This was from a six-pack that I bought when I was up in the Boston area. It is Sweet Tarts. It's a New York Cherry Sour Ale from Peak Organic Brewing Company. It looks like they're in Maine. I don't know. It's okay. It's like it's a sour beer, so not high in percentage. Very sweet. Got a little bit of a bite to it, but I like cherries, so it's all right.
That's cool. That's nice.
A little festive. A little festive.
Yeah.
It's always nice to change her up. Unfortunately, I'm sticking to the strong amber again. I don't know why. Every time I get something and I'm like, okay, what am I drinking tonight? I'm like, okay, all I've got is amber ale, but it's a different
comfort
brand.
Beer.
Yeah, that's right. This tonight it's from Brasseurs du Monde. It is it's called A Table. This complex beer, surprisingly easy to drink, contains more than 16 herbs and spices, as well as a few fruits. Created to have the depth of a red wine, it will stand tall and proud in front of the vast majority of foods.
Interesting.
It won a beer award. Oh, what year is this? 2014. Won the bronze medal for amber.
Oh, it was a bronze?
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
I did, I went to, there's a brewery in my town. I went there and I just have to applaud the name. I had a wheat beer by them that was called Wheat a Peach. I honestly thought it was the beer was called What a Peach until I went up to order one and then saw that it was Wheat a Peach. So when I ordered it, I was like, and I'll have a Wheat a Peach.
My favorite up here is, I think it's in Toronto, the Barking Squirrel.
That is good, too.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
And I'll have one of those. Yeah. I'll drink one of those. I love squirrels.
Yes.
Actually, a funny little story. While we were in Boston, again, for PAX, the one day we sort of did like a little walking tour, and there's these squirrels were like coming right up to people, and we had like a little pack of nuts, and they were grabbing the peanuts right out of our hands. They go and they bite
That's
it.
A little fresh.
It was awesome. I loved it. I love squirrels. They're my favorite.
No, the worst squirrel story I have is I took the kids into, there's a park near, like, we're talking like in the forest bush park. We were walking along and looking at the animals, and up in the, there's probably like 20, 30 foot trees. We see these two squirrels duking it out, and the kid, and so my kids are seven and five, and they're like, oh, look at the squirrels, look at the squirrels. Fell out of the tree and hit the dirt.
Oh no, poor little guy. Did he make it?
Yeah, they both ran away, so it was the old, are they okay, Daddy?
Oh, they both came
okay?
down?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, that's they're amazing. Good, they're good. They totally didn't run off somewhere to die.
They just need 5 minutes in the box.
That's right. Well, I think we've had enough squirrel stories. Maybe we should jump into the game.
And it starts talking about some frogs or something.
Yeah. All right. Well, so who's getting the unpleasant task of pronouncing the many of Japanese names that we have here on the agenda?
Well, it's pronounced Dream Team, right? I can say that. Yes, I'll leave the rest to Neil.
I do see that my name is next to this part, so I guess I'll fall on the sword.
I love you, David, for giving me the easy ones.
So, yeah, Chrono Trigger was a big deal. It really was. It was the meeting of the minds of the people who made Dragon Quest and the people who made Final Fantasy. I don't have all of the notes down here of the entire origin process, but I think David does have this line here about how the three people, them being Hironobu Sakaguchi, who's basically the father of Final Fantasy. He worked on pretty much all the Final Fantasy games, and I think was like top dog at Square Enix until he was a big part of Final Fantasy The Spirits Within, that Final Fantasy movie that was very expensive and totally bombed. And then he left Square and formed Mistwalker, so he did, like, Lost Odyssey, The Last Story on Wii. And I think he's been doing...
Started a new company, I think.
I think it's still Mistwalker, but I think they have a mobile game, if someone wants to double-check that while I go talk about the next guy, who's the father of Dragon Quest, Yuji Horii, who has basically been doing the same thing for about 30 years now, and he's been making new Dragon Quest games. So, you had Sakaguchi, you had Horii, and then you had Akira Toriyama, who's the guy who made the Dragon Ball comics, and also did art for Dragon Quest. So, the three of them were apparently on a plane trip together, and then they started talking, and then that slowly led to Chrono Trigger, which the idea of it sprouted in the early 90s. The game didn't come out until 95. But it was a dream team. It was Square and Enix coming together. Who would ever thought that that would happen? Apparently both companies, because they would later merge. So you had Sakaguchi, you had Horii, and you had Toriyama. After that, you had producers and the development team. I'm just going to go through the names and probably butcher them. Kazuhiko Aoki, who worked on Final Fantasy II and III. He worked on the battle design. Other directors, you had Akihiko Matsui, who worked on Final Fantasy IV and V, Romancing Saga 2. He's working on the Final Fantasy Online MMOs now. You had Yoshinori Kitase, who worked on Final Fantasy V and Romancing Saga. He was the director in Final Fantasy VI, which I think that was the first one that Sakaguchi did not direct. Kitase was kind of the heir apparent after Sakaguchi, and now I think Nomura is either ahead of him or I don't know. I forget where Kitase is in Square Enix, but he's been a big part of every Final Fantasy game since he started working on them.
Mm-hmm.
You have Takashi Tokita, who worked on Tom Sawyer, which is totally an NES game that I own. Then he worked on Final Fantasy 3, 4, 5. He's basically worked on spin-off Final Fantasy games since Chrono Trigger. A lot of mobile, smartphone stuff. Then you had Sakaguchi, creator of Final Fantasy. He was involved in pretty much everything until he left Square. I mean, really, Sakaguchi was the mastermind behind Chrono Trigger. There were other people involved, such as Masato Kato, who I am a huge, huge fan of. He started off working at Tecmo on the Ninja Gaiden games, was responsible for a lot of the cutscene story content in that. which was real cutting-edge stuff for story in video games. And then he worked on to work at Square Enix, and then, or worked, I think he was a part of Square during Chrono Trigger. But he was the writer on this, and then he went on to direct Chrono Cross, and has done a buttload of stuff in games since. He even worked on The Legend of Legacy, which is relevant to a recent Thirsty Mage about the Legend of Legacy's spiritual successor, which I believe Kata was not a part of.
No, they brought that other guy in to write instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kato's also... There's actually a Masato Kato game that is coming to Switch now, which we don't really have a lot of information about it. It was a mobile game. I'm totally blanking on the name of it.
Well, while we're looking for that, I did find the other game development. So he's still at Mistwalker, but on the wiki page it says, in 2016 he announced the formation of a new video game development company located in Tokyo. The proposed name of the studio is Dawnwalker.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that.
The name of the Masato Kato mobile game that is coming to Switch is Another Eden. It came out in Japan on mobile in 2017, and on the year anniversary, a Switch version was announced. So it does not... I'm not going to get too excited about this being localized, but the fact that it's being ported to Switch is a very good sign that it has a chance.
Mitsuda was the composer for Another Eden.
Yeah. Was he? He was one of the composers. I don't know. That's like the kind of thing where, like, oh, we got Grant Kirkhope to do a song. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, because I'm looking at some of the one-off songs for Mitsuda, and, like, you've got Smash Brothers for the Wii U, Smash Brothers for Brawl, Mega Man Legends 2, so he's got, like, a couple arrangements within that, but...
Yeah. Apparently, Kato really loves his time travel games, because Another Eden involves time travel elements where players explore different points in time.
There's also the stuff, I think it was Takashi Takeda, which is another person that I'm gonna double check on. So there was a game, Final Fantasy Dimensions 2, that came out on iPhones recently. It came out in the West in late October 2017, it came out on Halloween last year in 2017. Takashi Takeda, who was the director and designer of Final Fantasy Dimensions 2, basically said that a lot of there's characters and story concepts in this mobile game that were what he would have followed up Chrono Trigger with.
Sell a mobile game.
Yeah, I've been very close to playing. Actually, like, some of the Final Fantasy mobile games are interesting. Maybe not stuff that are gonna hook me, but, like, Square's trying some stuff there. And usually it's a lot of stuff where it's just that, like, yo, you like Final Fantasy games? We got, you know, like, look, it's Terra, it's Cloud, let's go. And that works on me. But Takeda's still doing stuff with that. Kato's still doing stuff vaguely related to Chrono Trigger. What other names do we got? Tetsuya Takahashi, the Monolith Soft dude. He was the graphics director on Chrono Trigger. This would start to lead him on the path in which he met his wife. They worked on a dark treatment of Final Fantasy VII that then became Xenogears, and then he started making his own company, and then was executive director on Xenoblade Chronicles 2. For more on that, go check out the Know Your Developers on Monolith Soft. That's on our YouTube channel, Nintendo World Report TV. We have Yasuyuki Hone, who's also at Monolith Soft. He was art director for Xenogears and Baten Kaitos. Tetsuro Nomura, who is basically the dude who ran Square Enix into the ground, depending on your perspective. added a lot of zippers. I don't know. I think Nomura's character design work is poor, and maybe he has a bad sense of time because all of his games get horribly delayed. But he's been a part of some good games, like Chrono Trigger. And then Yusuke Naora, who I have never heard before, but David listed in the notes, so I'll have time to say that name, was the art director for a lot of Final Fantasy games after Chrono Trigger. All right, so there's a lot of people there. I would say the most important names to remember from that, you got Sakaguchi, you got Yuji Horii, who those are... The former, the dude who made Final Fantasy, and the latter, the guy who made Dragon Quest. And then Masato Kato, who was the writer on Chrono Trigger and would go on to do Chrono Cross. the sequel that some people may or may not accept, and is really good, and will be a later episode.
I'm sure it'll be a future
Takashi episode. Takashi Takeda, who was a part of Square Enix and all that jazz, and made a mobile game that he says has a story that would have been how we'd follow up Chrono Trigger. So yeah, I'm done. Go on, Casey. Talk about the music.
You want to hear another game? Another name? Yes. Yasunori Mitsuda was the composer of this wonderful, wonderful soundtrack. I feel like the first second of the game to the end, it's just all the music is so enjoyable. But a little bit more about him was that this was actually his first game. He was a sound programmer with Square, and he was actually considering leaving because I guess he hadn't gotten the opportunity to actually write music. But this was his shot. So he did the majority of the songs for Chrono Trigger, but the final 10 tracks were actually written by Uematsu.
He's the Final Fantasy composer. Like, yeah. Yeah. If you think of NES Final Fantasy, it's that dude.
Mm-hmm. He actually finished the final 10 tracks because Mitsuda actually developed stomach ulcers and couldn't finish work on the game, which must have been very, very painful for him. I mean, not only the ulcers, but the fact that, like, finally, you know, he got his chance here to be the composer for the game and then to sort of not be able to wrap it up must have been pretty difficult to go through. But
my guess on the stomach ulcers is they probably came when he lost 40 songs to a hard drive crash.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Could you imagine? That would always back up your data.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this was actually one of the biggest soundtracks ever for a game at the time. And it is pretty freaking large. I'm a nerd, and I totally go back and listen to soundtracks at work pretty much all day. But I think this is, like, close to 2.5 hours of music for this game. So,
3 CDs.
You know, jam-pack that onto a Super Nintendo cartridge, and it's a pretty impressive feat. But, like I said, I mean, there's just so many memorable songs throughout the game. You know, like, The Trial, you know, that music is, you know, ingrained in my head. I can hear that, you know, whenever.
Frog's theme.
Obviously, the fair has really delightful music, and the Black Omen. That's probably my favorite music, and that comes in much later into the game. But I don't know about you guys. This is probably it's easily my top 5 soundtracks of all time, if not, you know, higher upon that list. But really, it's just so good from, you know, cover to cover.
I would say it might be like the second or third soundtrack of all time with Chrono Cross's. Chrono Cross's soundtrack is majestic. And I'm sorry to be a broken record with that, but it just, I don't know. I have a little bit of, like, little brother syndrome with Chrono Cross and my affection for it. But, like, the combination of Trigger and Cross's soundtracks, which Mitsuda also did the music for Chrono Cross, I think it's probably the best 2-game streak in a series as far as music goes ever.
Yeah, I need to check out Chrono Cross.
Just listen to the soundtrack.
Yeah, like, that might be on the agenda for tomorrow.
yeah, like there's, I mean, like there's Mitsuda's. I think a lot of Mitsuda's influences come from Celtic music, and because he, you know, Chrono Cross was a PlayStation game, a lot more of that comes through in that. But even that, even still, like I feel like some of that Celtic influence does come across in Chrono Trigger, just through Super Nintendo bleeps and bloops.
Yeah, and that's so good, so good. I mean, I don't know if we wanted to talk a little bit more. I mean, he's gone on to do a ton of work. I mean, like you said, obviously, Chrono Cross, you know, Bomberman, Xenosaga. He did some, that's almost read Monster Hunter, but it was Monster Kingdom. Inazuma 11, some work on, or at least, you know, featured in, like, Xenoblade Chronicles, the original one. So he's definitely keeping busy, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, as we mentioned before, you know. So, just a pedigree in the music that I think is pretty unrivaled, but I don't know. I could literally just, like, I know I'm sort of going on now, but I could really listen to that soundtrack at any time. And it's just, And I think it fits so perfectly with the music and just the visuals and stuff. I don't know if we want to start branching into other things past the music, but I just really the whole presentation, I think, is brought together so with that such a strong soundtrack. And even just like the enemy noises and like the just the sound design in general.
Yeah, it was all done great. We could go into the art design if you like. It's funny, actually. I was listening to, I think it was a few weeks ago on Radio Free Nintendo, that John Lindemann was actually complaining he did not appreciate the graphics of... I think I'm getting that right.
No. The Dragon Ball Z look of the characters?
Mm-hmm.
That I can get if you don't like the Dragon Ball look.
Then yeah, you might really not like you. The Chrono Trigger look either.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess I had a loose affiliation growing up with Dragon Ball Z, but I was never like a huge fan. But I think the art style is nice. I mean, it doesn't bother me. So for Chrono Trigger, I think, and I like how, you know, there's no animation like, oh, they get into their sort of their side angle when they're in battles, you know, how the battles just sort of take place where you're at. So the models, you know, look nice. And I mean, I don't know. Like I said, it never bothered me. Like you said, I guess I could see if you just didn't jive with you.
Do you guys remember your impressions at the time? Like I just played this like last month. That was my first go. But I'm assuming you guys probably played like in the 90s.
When did I first play Chrono Trigger? Probably late 90s. Maybe even. I mean, David, when we're as old as you, maybe we'll be able to remember specific times better. But now, like, I think I probably played this for the first time when I was around 12 years old, which would put it at about the year 2000. I probably played it on an emulator, and it was kind of mind-blowing to me, because that was during my RPG discovery period. What hooked me in RPGs, which I've probably mentioned on the show again and will mention all the time because it's what happened. I had played like Dragon Quest and the original Final Fantasy on NES and enjoyed them, but didn't really totally get into them. They're very difficult games to approach,
sort
especially when you're young.
A little bit, yeah.
Then Super Mario RPG was my gateway drug. Played the hell out of that, probably like 97, 98. And then that's when my brother got a PlayStation around then, and I got Final Fantasy VII. I got, I want to say that Final Fantasy Anthology might have come out around then. And then I also got into the emulation scene because I did not own a Super Nintendo. So I played a lot of Super Nintendo RPGs in that way. And then by the early 2000s, I got a Super Nintendo at a flea market in like 2002, 2003 or something. And then went on a buying spree, which I still have record of all the money that I spent on Super Nintendo games on eBay from like 2002, 2003. And it was a great idea.
Those prices were probably amazing.
Yup. Like I can remember, I think Chrono Trigger, I think I got for $35 cart only.
It's like
on eBay in like 2002, 2003.
200.
And I think that one, I don't think it's that high, but I think it's, I think I still got it for a good solid $15, $20 cheaper than what it's going for now. I know there's a lot of them. Like, I want to say, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time is one that I got for 10 to 15 bucks, probably with free shipping. And I think that one easily goes for 40 or 50 now. But, yeah, so that's my story with Chrono Trigger. And then I got my own Super Nintendo copy and played the hell out of that. And that was probably my second complete replay, was when I got my Super Nintendo version of it. And then played it on DS. And for the purposes of this, I was a couple hours in, but then was reading the boss fight book on Chrono Trigger to kind of help refresh my memory of a game that I really, really do enjoy. And from playing the first couple hours again for this, it kicks. It's just a very well-paced game.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I guess for me, I had a buddy. I met him in sixth grade. We're still friends to this very day, my buddy Kevin. But his brother was, I don't know how many years older than us, but a sizable amount. So, you know, he was really big into video games. So we sort of got our good taste from him. Like, he showed us Earthbound. He showed us, you know, Final Fantasy 3 or 6, whatever you want to call it, Chrono Trigger. So these were sort of how I was introduced to these games at a pretty early age. You know, what are you in, sixth grade? You're probably, yeah, around 12, give or take. So I remember playing it on his cartridge. He had the cartridge. I remember playing it there. And then, yeah, I did some emulation. And then I eventually picked up the game. And, yeah, I bought a loose cartridge. Like you said, I could probably go on eBay and try and look through all, like, my dad's account to see when I might have bought it, to see what the price was. But I can't imagine it was too much because I bought it a really long time ago. So, you know, I was just a kid, so I probably, you know, no more than, like, $30, give or take. And, yeah, I played it on that, but I never beat the game. To be honest with you, I never got super duper far. I'm trying to think where, like, maybe, you know, when you, just when you sort of get Frog, after you do, like, the whole Musimune, you know,
Masamune.
Yeah, I always screw up the name. That quest, like, that's always sort of, I feel like, where I got up to, and then whether it was another game that sort of pulled my interest or just not being fully committed to seeing it through. So my first actual completion was just last year when it finally clicked. Like you said, I got the DS version. I played it again on there. I'd start it and I'd be like, you know, you get like a couple hours in and something else would pop up. And then finally I just something clicked. I'm like, I'm going to beat it here. This is going to be the time I see it through. And like you said, all of a sudden, when you get into that role of things, it's just like, oh, the pacing, everything's going so, not fast, but just at the right speed, right enough battles with, you know, enough story and jumping around and, you know, experimenting with the different characters in your party. And it's just, it really, I guess you could probably beat the game, I think, what's it like, probably 15 hours, 15 to 20 hours, depending on, how many you know, how much grinding you do, but, you know, it doesn't feel even, I know that's not a very long RPG, but it doesn't feel long at all because just of how it, you get into that rhythm and it just sort of, the hours sort of melt away. But yeah, I mean, for me, I beat it on the DS. I actually ended up selling my, the cartridge last year, and yeah, I got, I think $90 or $95 for it loose. So yeah, they still sell quite a bit.
Oh jeez, yeah. I didn't realize they were that high now.
Yeah, they're pretty high.
I'm looking on eBay. I mean, and I know buy it now prices aren't always indicative, but $130, $140. You could probably sell it for $100 relatively easy if you wanted.
See, that's the kind of thing. Just in, like I should probably sell my copy of Chrono Trigger, but it's a really important game to me. Like,
yeah,
I like that game a whole lot. It's like I have my PlayStation 1 copy of Chrono Cross. I don't even really have a system to play it on easily. Like, I think I have a PS2 somewhere. I think it's still at my parents. But I can't. I like Chrono Cross, so I want to keep the hard copy.
Yeah, I've got my Persona 4 Golden, yet I don't have a PS Vita anymore. But yeah. Speaking of Vitas, isn't that where you played yours, David?
Yeah, well, my first playthrough of Chrono Trigger happened way, way back when I was 35, you know, last month.
Just a few weeks ago. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe the better question here is, what took you so long?
I don't know.
Yeah, you big Jimmy.
It doesn't make any sense.
Like, you host an RPG podcast. You decided to make an RPG podcast, yet you haven't played Chrono Trigger before. Like, what, were you not that into RPGs in the 90s?
No,
and just like JRPGs or something that you kind of missed eras of?
I think it's because it was on Super Nintendo. Because, I mean, like, Sakaguchi's my hero. Like, I played all the Final Fantasies. And especially, like, it was funny, I was preparing, like, I'm kind of thinking about doing a Know Your History on Final Fantasy. And I'm like, man, I've played Final Fantasy 1 so much. I'm like, I wonder if I could literally say every single thing that you need to do in that game. So I kind of just did it on my own, and I went through, like, I kind of said it out loud, and then I went and checked a walkthrough, and I'm like, man, I was like 99%, like, from start to finish. Is like, I played that game so much. But the Super Nintendo, I just kind of missed most of the games off the Super Nintendo.
And that's like the RPG golden era, if, I mean, yeah, according to some, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would say legitimately, and some of these are more fresher opinions, because I played Final Fantasy V in a non-weird fan translation form for the first time last year. And, like, the Super Nintendo games, if you include Final Fantasy V, VI, even 4, which I don't like nearly as much as 5 and 6, but then you have Chrono Trigger, you have Super Mario RPG. There's probably a couple other RPGs that I'm not...
I haven't played Secret of Mana.
Yeah, I was going to say the Secret of Mana games.
Man, I don't like that game. I gave it another honest shot on Super Nintendo Classic, and I think that might be one where the nostalgia just doesn't pull me. And, like, it's weird. Like, I've heard some people play Secret of Mana on Super Nintendo more recently, and it clicked with them. And I've tried several times over the past 10 to 15 years, and that game is never... Like, I've never been able to have the urge to play past an hour or two.
Yeah, and I haven't finished Earthbound or Super Mario RPG. Illusion of Gaia. Yeah. Secret of Evermore.
Illusion of Gaia is a deep cut, but a really good one.
You know, I bought that from a retro game store probably like a year and a half ago, maybe even two. And that's one I really want to get to as well, because I think it's Johnny Metz who sings the praise of that one, or at least he used to on RFN. And that was always one I wanted to check out. But yeah, there's just a ton of... really great games, but yeah, at least you can get back into them now with some VC stuff, at least for, like, you know, Super Mario RPG and Earthbound.
Yeah, well, and it was, like, trying to track down, so basically it was, like, you two dudes telling me, like, you need to play this game, and I kind of knew I should, but I just never got around to it, so then I started looking into, like, trying, like, okay, how am I going to get this, so I was looking at the SNES cartridges, and like, no, I'm not, that's way too much. So then I looked into the DS, and it was cheaper, but it was still probably like $100.
The DS, just a brief interjection, I had a copy of it on DS that I got when it first came out, and then something happened to my cartridge of it. I believe I lent it to a friend, but then that friend claims that I never lent it to them. I don't know. A couple of years ago, you could get a brand new copy of Chrono Trigger on DS for like $20. I think they just had a big supply, and that's like I bought it again a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
And I'm glad I did, because now that DS version is impossible to find.
Yep.
Me too. I don't know if I bought it through, because I remember Square Enix had like not a fire sale, but they had like a huge sale on all of their their online, and I ordered like 8 games, and I don't know if Chrono Trigger was in that, or like you said, or if I had just bought for like $20 off eBay. But yeah, looking at it now, 50, 65, it's definitely jumped up in price. But I guess, I mean, that's sort of the definitive way to play, or really, I mean, it's got the added anime cutscenes, which I always appreciate when like you're playing a game, you come up to a cutscene, they show you that nice animation. And then all of a sudden it like cuts back out, and then it shows you like the original story bit.
Yeah.
like when they're splitting the cave open, or the wall to form the cave, and it's like some epic cutscene. You're like, oh my god, that was awesome. And then all of a sudden they like go back out, and Frog just like raises his sword, and you hear like, and then it just slides apart, and you're like, oh man, that's so good that they just back to back, you get to see the same thing.
Yeah. And then, So the version I ended up playing was, so I started, I played probably the first hour on, I just so happened to have my brother's PSP, to his chagrin, and I purchased Chrono Trigger. I really wanted it mobile, because I'm kind of to the point now that I've played the Switch for so much, I'm like, oh man, every game should be mobile. So I ended up purchasing the PS1 Classic Edition on the PSP. I played through to the past the point where he gets to the judgment, where they have the trial, and it was funny because I went to the trial and realized that I had failed everything.
You are the ultimate worst Chrono.
That always happens. Like, Yeah. That happened to me the first time I played the game, I remember, where I was like, what did I do wrong? Yeah. It's just like, no, I just played the game like I normally play games.
Yep. You stole the lunch.
I stole the lunch. Yeah. You did that. I stole the lunch. I picked up the pendant before seeing if Marley was okay. I talked to the girl about the cat. I found the cat, and I'm like, I don't care. I'm just going to go to sleep. It's like, the cat's not following me. Forget this. I'm moving on. Yeah, basically everything that could have gone wrong, went wrong. And then... But I was just, playing on the PSP was irritating. So I ended up tracking down a PS Vita, off of, it's kind of like
some
Canadian,
high schooler, right?
Basically. Yeah.
Shady deals.
I was telling the guys after I purchased it, I'm like, I don't know if it's just that I'm old or what, but it just seems like either I just bought a Vita off a shady guy who may have stolen it, or all high school kids look like drug dealers to me now. I'm not sure how much is, you know.
You might have gotten to that age.
Yeah, I might
be
at that
age. Get off my lawn.
No, I don't want crack. Just give me my Vita.
Yeah.
So I started her back up. I did everything properly this time, and I enjoyed playing it on the Vita a lot, way better than the PSP. And that's how
which
I
is weird. I think that the Vita version does have a little bit of like, because it's based on the PlayStation 1 version, so the release history of Chrono Trigger came out on Super Nintendo, and then before Chrono Cross came out, Square Enix re-released it. How it came to America that way was in 2001. It was on Final Fantasy Chronicles, a twofer game that had Chrono Trigger, and I believe that's the one with Final Fantasy IV. There was another, there was Final Fantasy Anthology came out on PlayStation 1 that had 5 and 6. What that PlayStation 1 version is known for, and I believe I owned it at some point. I might have actually have gotten that before I got it on the Super Nintendo, so that might have been another way that I played the game. The load times on Chrono Trigger and that are atrocious, which I remember being basically unplayable when I played that version. But it could be that as it got re-released as a PlayStation 1 classic across PS3, Vita, and PSP, maybe like they could kind of smooth over some of the load times by having it being a digital download.
Yeah, that's my guess, because it seemed pretty fast for me. With the Vita, like, it's kind of like the Switch where you just throw it into sleep mode, and when you turn it back on, it's right where you left it.
Yeah.
The only thing I found a bit slow was when I came into a battle, I felt like there was the hesitation before the actual battle was a little long, but I don't know if that was just the way the game played or if it was because it was on PlayStation. It wasn't enough to make it... It didn't spoil the experience, but it was noticeable, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah, on the DS, I don't think there's really... They come running in, and then you're right into the battle. There's not really any pause.
Yeah. The DS version, that came out later, following up our versions discussion. That came out in 2008. That was a new translation done by... The original one was done by Richard Honeywood, who did a lot of Square localizations from that era. The other one was done by Tom Slattery, which I don't know that much about him. But the translation was kind of updated and revised to be more accurate on the DS version. That basically is the definitive version, so to speak. It has all of the anime cutscenes from the PlayStation release. It has extra content, some new endings, and both the... I'm pretty sure that the PlayStation version, and I know for a fact that the DS version, were overseen by some of the original staff. In this case, I know Masato Kato came back for some of the expanded endings and stuff in the DS version. That DS version, the guts of it, basically became the mobile version, which came out, which in turn are also related to the Windows version that came out in February 2018. Although it's worth noting that the mobile version and the Windows version are kind of ugly messes. They tried to freshen up the graphics for mobile, and they look like crap.
Yeah, don't the
And there's a lot of other problems. Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of other problems with it, too. But Square, after the outcry, when the Windows port came out in February and was garbage, it was basically the mobile version, but on a PC. Square Enix has since announced that they are going to be doing... updates to the game to kind of make it better. They have already released one by the time of recording, which, from what I've heard, have made the game a lot better on PC. So that's good. Hopefully it'll get even better and be probably the easiest and most affordable way to play Chrono Trigger and actually have it be a good way to play the game, too.
One thought that just crossed my mind is it's actually funny that it didn't end up on the SNES Mini.
That's probably because Square was going to be releasing it on Windows a couple months later.
if that's the reason, man, that would be disappointing.
I could definitely see that being is that Chrono Trigger is probably more useful to Square not in a compilation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, Final Fantasy VI, for example, which was on the Super Nintendo Classic, same with Secret of Mana. Those were games that might not be, although they did have the Secret of Mana remake, but I guess that was a remake and not just the original game.
Yeah, being ported.
Yeah. That could play, some of it might just be like, what did Nintendo want? And maybe they didn't want to, maybe they only wanted like a Final Fantasy game and not necessarily Chrono Trigger or something like that. I don't know how all of the licensing works.
Final Fantasy
works
probably has a broader appeal to people who aren't, you know, knee-deep in RPGs, so...
Yeah, I guess the other thing, there was a lot of RPGs on the Mini, too, when you consider, like,
Super Mario percentage-wise. RPG. Yeah, Super Mario RPG, you had Final Fantasy VI, you had Earthbound.
Secret
and then
of
throwing
Mana.
In another, Secret of Mana is at least an action RPG.
Yeah, a little
you
different.
Could have had four, if you had Chrono Trigger in there, you'd have four turn-based RPGs.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they just figured they'd go with that. It just hit me in my mind, I'm like, man, was that on the Mini? Because, like...
Yeah. It did, and it did come out on Wii Virtual Console, but not on any other American Virtual Console. I think Chrono Trigger probably came out on Japan, maybe on Wii Virtual Console or even 3DS Virtual Console. I'm not 100% sure, but I know it never came to the North American Wii U or 3DS Virtual Console. But they released a Windows version 2 months ago. I think we'll probably see Chrono Trigger back in some form. I wouldn't even be surprised if it gets released on Switch at some point. But when?
Arcade Archives.
Archives, Chrono Trigger. Super Nintendo Archives, that'll be the name of it.
Oh, come on, Nintendo. Come on.
You know, that arcade version of your RPG favorites.
Extra quarters.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you, though, if they did do it, people would buy.
Oh, so. I probably would.
I'd buy it.
Yeah, of course.
Well, there you go. You got three sales already, Nintendo. Get on it.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we when we take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll actually discuss the game, what we liked about it, and go over our experiences with it.
Ooh-wee.
And welcome back. So we will be discussing Chrono Trigger and what we liked about the game, go through the different aspects, and go from there. So, like I was saying in the first intermission there, I actually had the opportunity to go through the, I guess you'd call it the tutorial phase.
Yeah, opening area there.
Yeah. So, essentially it was going through that first little part in
carnival.
The festival. And then heading back in time to 600 AD, I guess it was, meeting up with Frog, getting the queen back, and then having the rude awakening of going through a trial because you allegedly kidnapped the princess as soon as you've come back and fixed everything.
Yeah, the deck was definitely stacked against you, not in your favor.
Yeah. And so if you're playing for the first time, there is no way to win that trial, apparently. Because, like I said at the first, I had pooched all of the different things. I guess I was going to ask you guys, when I went through the festival, I did not go in the magician's tent.
Nornstein Beckler's?
Yes. Yeah. Did you guys do that
probably not in my first playthrough. I seem to recall my first playthrough being the same thing as you, where I just messed up the trial. But even that, no matter what you do in the trial, like, you still go to jail. It's not like, oh, you did it perfectly. You're fine.
Yeah, because that, like you said, this wasn't my first playthrough. So I did maybe not everything perfectly, but I did more good than bad. So I was innocent. But yeah, then all of a sudden the chancellor or whatever his role is comes out and he's like, well, you still need to go to jail for 2 days for disturbing the peace or some BS, you know. And then when you're in there, he's like, let's kill him anyway.
But yeah, like the Nornstein Beckler stuff, like that can kind of play into some of the end game because that's how you can get a chrono doll. But yeah, I mean, I definitely kind of blazed through the Millennial Fair my first time playing it. Outside, like, I fought Gatto a couple times and, you know, roamed around there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a cool introductory area.
It gives you a good sense of, like, you learn the battle system early on.
Yeah.
So you kind of get the idea there, and it's not like it's not easy, but it's not punishing either. So it gives you a good taste of what's to come. When you get Frog and Luca, then you pretty early on in the cathedral, you start getting I can't remember what they're called.
The techs.
Yeah, the techs, so that you can do like the cross moves where you.
The double tech and the triple techs, which when you use a certain formation of people together, or, you know, in earlier cases, even just two, they sort of get a good rapport together and then unlock abilities that they could use in conjunction. So, yeah, like you said, the X, I think Luca, what's the one where she, like, throws the flames up there?
And then, the fire spin with Chrono?
Yeah, and then Chrono grabs it with his sword, you know, so... that's a really, really cool battle system mechanic to me, especially, you know, we'll get more into more of the characters, I'm sure, in a little bit. But there is a pretty large stock of characters that you can switch in and out of your party at any given time. So to get the different characters working together and unlocking these new double and triple techs, which, you know... To use them, I guess we should get into, I guess, the actual, a little bit more about the battle system as far as that it's timed. So, you know, you have your gauge fills up, and then when it does, you can make your action. But the enemy can attack, you know, it's not turn-based. So, you know, if you're sort of taking a second to fumble around the menu to find your attack... And you're too slow, the enemy can jump in and attack you. So you got to sort of be on your toes. And then when all of your characters or when two characters get to the point where they can attack, that's when you can start using the different techs. And like I said, they deal crazy damage, or in some cases they might, you know, in conjunction do a heal and do, you know, a stronger heal or a heal that, you know, hits all the party members instead of just one.
Yeah, and you definitely need to learn that system because I really don't think there's... you're not going to beat the game if you haven't really gotten a good grasp of the other tiers. Like, it's...
Yeah, I think it's... They become very necessary. I mean, maybe not so much the triple techs. I mean, I guess there's probably some situations where they really, really come in handy. I can't think of off the top of my head. But the double techs, you know, are very important, you know, especially when it comes to healing and stuff.
Yeah. What were, did you have any go-to double techs?
Like you said, I like that X one. I'm so bad with the names, so.
Yeah, that's what I want to try to find a list of the... Chrono Trigger text, because I don't remember what they were called.
But I know with Robo, you know, and some of the healing ones, like, especially when you get those tough battles, like, to be able to heal up your entire party or, you know, with, you know, big, beefy heals, so... Because there were... Like I said, I haven't now... I messed around a little bit with this game recently, but I'm basing most of this off of when I played it a little less than a year ago, so I might be a little hazy on some of the particulars, but... I mean, I loved changing up the party and trying to get different techs to mess around with, you know? Generally, I've been trying to make a more conscious effort to switch party members up in RPGs, because I sort of get stuck in my, like the bread and butter. Like, oh, this is working. I don't want to change it, you know?
Yeah.
So this was, I think, a fun way because, you know, you could bring in one party member and then that's going to give you new double techs and new triple techs. So it was cool to be able to be rewarded for changing up the party.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of games now, too, they throw in that curve of, oh, well, we're going to take some of these party members away, so you better hope you had worked on those other ones.
Nightmares of Alliance Alive coming back to me.
<That's right. laughs> I did enjoy all the Cyclone techs. Usually Chrono was involved in those. Because that would also have the enemy spacing be very important, too, because if you had the enemies bunched up together, then you could do a cyclone attack and hit all of them.
That's true.
And I did, like, X-Strike is the one where it's Chrono and Frog, and they cross-slash an enemy. I always like the look of that.
Yeah, I was going to say the animations are really cool.
Yeah, looking through some of the names and remembering Frog Launcher, the one where Robo just throws Frog at opponents, always made me laugh.
Just hurls him.
Whenever, like, the text with Isla just destroying people are always real fun. Looking at the names of the triple stacks, Delta Storm, the Chrono Luka Frog one was one that I used a lot. I remember
I used Glacier a lot. I really liked the, because my party was I used Marley, Chrono, and Frog for most of the game. So I would use the Glacier attack a lot, and the ice, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the Ice Storm. Use that one a lot. The one I didn't actually discover it until later in the game, but the Frog Squash, I thought was hilarious.
Frog,
it saved me to jam, actually, because Frog was, like, down to nothing, and it might have even been the first time I discovered it, where it's like, the attack is based on health, and I'm like, oh,
perfect.
Great. Yeah, he's got, like, 10 left. This is gonna literally
do some big damage, yeah,
and it did, and I'm like, man, I'm gonna have to remember this for later.
But yeah, I think the animations for all of the techs are really cool as well.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of an underrated thing, because you're sort of thinking about how much damage you're doing, and like you said, the spatial awareness for some of them, that it's just really fascinating. And I mean, did you guys like the, I mean, I think you could actually change it to a turn based style if you want, right? Or maybe that was added in the later version.
I was actually trying to think if that was that way, because I know, like, the Final Fantasy games that had active time battle, you could always have it not be like wait as opposed to active.
In
my version, it did ask. It did ask which way I wanted to play in my version, and I chose turn based. But then, I don't think it was, because I'm sitting there like, what am I going to use? And I'm like, hey, why is he attacking me? This is bullshit.
They don't change it. Just notes, okay, a pansy's playing.
Yeah, it was almost like it was like just a troll. Like, here, do you want to choose one of these? And I, we're not giving you that.
They just wanted to know what kind of gamer you were.
That's right.
I did like some of the triple tech. Like, there's bunch of triple techs that don't involve Chrono, which, I think, like, my first time playing the game, I didn't really know they were even there, because...
Who takes Chrono out?
Well, I mean, there's a part of the game where he's not there.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But it was, like, when I got Chrono back, he immediately went to the front of my party, because he's tremendous as a fighter in this game. But even then, I was just so focused on, like, I need to get Chrono back, how do I do this help, that I didn't really pay that much attention to the other triple techs I could do.
I love the fire whirl when Chrono is like on top of Robo and they both start twirling around.
Yeah, Robo's definitely got some really cool techs, visually speaking.
Yeah.
But I guess what were your main, I guess, did you say, David, who your like main three were? You know, if there was a preferred three?
Yeah, I mean, preferred three was definitely Frog, Chrono, and Marley. Like that's who I beat. That's how I my final three at the very end. Like that's when I went through the Black Omen to defeat Lavos. That's the three people I had. I did mix it up though, because I wasn't sure if there was going to be a point where they're like, well, we're going to take these three people away, so now you got to finish this dungeon with the other three. That was always weighing on the back of my mind, so I think the strategy I ended up with was I typically kept Chrono and Marley in my party and would just scroll through the third person. So I'd have Frog for a while, and then I'd have Robo for a while, and so I just kind of went... So I did use everyone throughout the game.
Yeah.
Use them enough to like really understand all their moves and stuff. So I got a good... I guess the person I used the least was Magus.
I was just going to say, Magus is so damn powerful. He, like, if I'm looking at... I'm trying to remember what my original final three might have been. And I mean, Chrono was definitely there. I think it was Chrono, Frog, Magus.
Yeah, I think for me, throughout most of the game, or like, you know, my preferred, it would be Chrono, Marley, and Ayla. And then I think when I got towards the end of the game, when things started to ramp up a little more, and I wanted to get some more healing in there, I switched out Ayla for Robo. So, you know, my Lavos kill would have been Chrono, Marley, and Robo. But, like you said, yeah, Frog's always good. And plus, who doesn't love Frog?
Yeah. I mean, really, his song. His song's so good. Yeah.
They made it tough, though, because I really thought all of the characters, you know, I thought were enjoyable. You know, obviously, they're all sort of coming from different time periods, and it's sort of cool to see, you know, some, you know, really ancient, like Ayla, you know, is from, what's it, 64 million BC or something?
Yeah.
Or something to that extent. You know, and so she doesn't really...
Ayla loves to fuck.
Yeah, she loves Chrono. And and she loves bonking skulls. So she's a
That's
she's
not the
badass.
Only thing she bonks.
You pervert.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there in front of you during the game.
I know, it's well, even funny.
And Kino obviously knows what's going on. Cause
yep.
Yeah, he's like, I missed that. That used to be mine.
Yeah. I mean, that's I do really like all characters are really good. I mean, Luca's one that I would use. She would be my first to be replaced because Marley was always a very good. Marley's a very good healer early on, and I feel like that just works. Like when you're getting a handle on the game, it's nice to have that reliable healing character that kind of fits that archetype. But one thing that I do like as your party rounds up to the seven total, with one of them being optional in Magus, right? Yeah, it's Chrono.
Yeah, you could fight him.
Chrono, Marley, Luca, Frog, Robo, Ayla, and then Magus. There's multiple characters that could be used as healers. Because I know Frog and Robo both have healing. Marley has healing.
Yep.
I don't know if anybody else. I think those are the only three that have healing abilities. I think Ayla might actually have a healing spell. I'm not sure. But, like, usually yeah, you have it where it's like, oh, like, here's the one, like... You always got to keep this character in the party because she can revive. She's the only one who has a spell to revive people. Like,
yeah, she Ayla has a kiss, okay. Which is it's weak, but like you said, it is a little bit of something to give her a little versatility.
Like, I mean, every character does fit into an archetype, especially with the elements, because I mean they're all tied to different elements too. But they're not. Just like stereotypical versions of these archetypes, they have a lot more depth, especially when you factor in the dual and triple attacks.
Yeah, I find it's I love how they get their magic abilities too. With I can't remember that dude's name, but at the end of time,
oh, a little like
Gasper.
Yeah, where the he's like, yeah, just bring people to me. I'll give them magic. It's fine. It's cool.
Run around the room.
Yeah, that's right. Run around the room.
And then you're sitting there hugging the wall. Like, do I need to hug it exactly? Yeah, I better just go right along the wall. What was it, three or five times or whatever it is?
Yeah. And then I brought Robo, and he was like, "This thing's not alive."
Yeah, he doesn't get magic. Get him out of here.
Yeah. We'll just call his laser shadow. How's that sound? Does that sound good? Sounds good. And then when I brought Magus, and he's like, man, this guy could teach me magic.
That's so funny. Yeah, I think the game does a nice job at being like lighthearted, but also serious too, you know, like sort of strikes that nice balance of not taking itself too seriously, but still having like a nice, coherent, you know, and deep story.
Yeah, I think balance is probably like the key theme throughout the game. Like, everything just seems kind of just to be perfectly in tune. Like, it's never, I never felt like there was, like, ridiculously easy or ridiculously hard. It was all just kind of, like, just flowed well.
Yeah,
there wasn't slow parts. Like, the story kind of just maintained a balanced speed. Like, there was no, like, oh, all this is happening at once, or, man, we haven't done much lately.
Yeah, and then when you do run into that sort of difficult boss, it you don't need to go and grind for hours on end. You know, it's usually just like a, oh, maybe I can go, you know, sort of tweak something, maybe pull in a different party member, and just sort of approach the fight a little differently. And then I feel like I, you know, or felt like I had success with that. You know, it's never like, all right, let's go grind for 3 hours, and then I'll try and beat my head against it and hope for the best. You know, like you said, everything just felt right, you know.
Yeah, it's such a well-paced RPG in that regard, in that, like, you just kind of play the game. And yeah, you'll have some tough fights, but if it's more of a puzzle to solve than it is, oh, I just need to grind.
Yeah, I don't recall grinding ever. Like, I think I just went through the whole game. I don't remember grinding at all.
I think the only, yeah, I was going to say, the only time I think I quote-unquote grinded would have been when you unlock those, what's it, like five quests or five or six, like, side quests before Lavos.
Yeah.
And where they sort of, you go do a quest and then you get, like, a really nice item that sort of boosts your, you know, party members. So, like, that was really, I'd say, the only time it was sort of grind, like, I did any sort of grind. And really, it's still not a grind because they are quests. It's not like it's literally just, you know, farming the same monster over and over again. So that was the only time I felt like I was like, all right, I'm going to go do this just to get stronger.
Yeah, for me, the only time it felt kind of along those lines was going through the Black Omen, because that was long.
Yeah, that's a hard section.
Yeah, like, it's not like a, man, this is too long. It was just, you know, this is the end. I can tell.
They just knew that had the best music in the game. So, like, we better make this part a little bit bigger, a little bit longer than the other ones.
But it also gave you that opportunity to get strong enough to defeat Lavos. Like, because I probably gained a ton of levels just going through the Black Omen.
Oh, yeah.
And then if I hadn't had that, I don't think I would have beaten Lavos. Like, I would have had to have grinded at that point.
Just nice pacing once again, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then with the whole, it's funny, too, because looking at how the game worked, I was a little skeptical of the, like, how many things in media with time travel work out. Like, I was kind of waiting for that point where it was like, oh, man, like, something's not going to make sense here. Something's going to be so, like, terrible that it's... But it's like, they perfectly made the time travel work, I felt. Yeah. The only thing that was weird to me was getting Chrono back. I'm like, this is okay.
And I'm like, oh, you know the name of the game? Guess what? It's a Deus Ex Machina now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, so you go find this magician and get a clone of Chrono. And I'm like, okay. And then they're like, and then you take the clone and then you replace him in Point of Time. And then if your person is important enough, go to Death Mountain or Death Peak or whatever it is. And some entity will put him back to life or something. I like that. That was the only part of Chrono Trigger to me that was like, okay, like that's.
Here's the Chrono Trigger. Take the pendant to this hill. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think that initially I think Chrono just died and was dead. And then, like, someone higher up was probably just... I think someone higher up was just like, you can't do that. And I'm like, all right, we'll bring him back.
Yeah, fine. How would you have felt if they just axed Chrono right then and there?
As a child, I would have been crestfallen. If a game did that now, I'd probably burst out laughing.
I'd probably applaud it. Be like, nice job, you know, like to have the cojones to do it and stick to it.
His name's in the title. We don't care.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably be around the same attitude, except for the fact that Chrono was, like, by far and away my best fighter.
Yeah.
And he's, when he was gone, I was partly devastated because like he was the one that the one guy trashing everybody.
Which is why it's effective that, like, you want to get him back because you're like, oh, no, I'm so much weaker without my boy.
Yeah. I tell you what, Ayla's a good replacement, man. She's tough.
Yeah.
So that was, like, when I had those two in the party, like, I felt like they were sort of similar roles, you know? And, yeah, when Chrono...
Wreck fools.
Yeah, when Chrono died, I was like, oh, well, it's like now I get some more people, like, some variety in here, and I get to keep Ayla. But yeah, then we had to go rescue him. But
my first thought was, "Oh well, shit! How do I get him back?"
Yeah, I do think if there's one convoluted part of the game though, it's definitely the Chrono. Like I like that they do it still. Like I like the fact that they kill off the main character and then you have to go on a quest to bring him back. But and David, you still haven't played Final Fantasy VI, right?
I've played it. I can't recall how far I've gotten.
Okay. Yeah, I have not played that one. All right. Well, like I played very little bit.
Okay. There is a similar use of the like kill your darlings with a protagonist thing in Final Fantasy VI, and I think that's way more effective. But I think that like the moment in Chrono Trigger just drives home how like he's such an important character because he's so integral to the combat and the gameplay that like I just think it's a good, effective use of that, even if I think it's a little clumsily implemented. Because you want to get him back because he's good in your party, not just because of the story.
Yeah, I think it worked. Like you said, the everything about it worked except the how you got him back. Maybe yeah. They could have tweaked that. But even the reaction, it was funny because I think I went to talk to the guy who gives you magic after, and he was like, "Hey, where's that red-haired spiky kid?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of funny because it was like a lighthearted, like, you know, everyone in the party was devastated that he had died, and, yeah. Then, and he's like, "I really miss that kid. What happened to him?"
Just in his little locked-in room, you know, in the End of Time, just yeah. Hanging out.
Or when you had where you so yeah, I didn't see the magician at the beginning of the game. So then when they told me I had to go find the clone, I'm like, okay. And then they're like, oh, the clone's dropped off of your house. And I'm like, oh, why? So then I went back to the house, and then the mother's like, hey, Chrono's, everything's cool with Chrono. He seems kind of weird. I'm like,
He's a doll? Yeah.
Everything's cool. See you later.
Yeah, we're going to take this clone that's been in your house and then kill it.
That's right. So, yeah. Thought that was kind of funny. I was just gonna say, did any apart from Chrono, so we kind of talked about the parties we have, but did you have like a specific character that was your favorite?
I mean, Frog was my favorite from the rest of the party, but I mean probably half of that is based on his theme song.
Yeah. Oh. It is really good.
Whenever I think about Frog in this, it just plays in my mind and I smile. But I also, I like him as a character just because, I mean, I think his Frog animations are goofy. And I do like his, you know, his friend got murked by Magus and, he's trying to get revenge. So like more power to him. I think with that in mind, like Magus definitely falls into that tired Vegeta anti-hero trope. But I mean, he's kind of the emotional center of Chrono Trigger in a way, because the reason why he becomes Magus is, I mean, to save his sister, Shala. And like, is he, I mean, I guess maybe the writing of Magus, like in the game, that's probably a lot more of the affection for Magus comes from what was in my mind as opposed to what's in the game. But I still like that character a lot. And I think that there is... like, there's a reason why he's a character that seems to be beloved from the series.
Yeah, as soon as I saw Janus, I'm like, that kid is totally Magus.
Mm. Yep.
Oh, yeah, big like time.
It took about 3 seconds. Like, oh, there's Magus as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, like you said, I don't think there's really one particular character I dislike. But if there... aside from Chrono, I mean, like you said, he's sort of the most badass of them all. But I really did like Ayla a lot. Just like the bluntness and how, like you said, how much she just goes out there and kicks ass, you know, and
yeah,
partying hard. What do they call the Ayla... the?
Oh God,
I'm forgetting when they get drunk that you have the chugging competition, right?
And yeah.
Oh yeah, the dance off,
and they all have like they're all hit. Yeah. I mean, she was always one of my favorites. So
yeah.
Well, her ending is funny, too, where she just looks at Keenum like, yeah, you're my husband now.
Yeah, I guess I'll settle. But yeah, I mean, what did you guys think? I mean, obviously, the biggest aspect of Chrono Trigger is the whole time travel situation, you know, and jumping in between, what's there? There's the current day... 600 AD.
There's 1000 AD. There's 600 AD. There's 1999.
Yeah, apocalypse.
No, 1999 is the apocalypse, and then 2300 is where you go to.
Yeah, that's the future.
Yeah. And then there's 12,000 BC.
Yep, that's where magic Black users and the regular people were separated.
Yep.
Yeah, and then of course the prehistoric, and I mean, you know, for me, time travel, I feel like is one of those things people love, you know, in games and in just movies or books or whatever. Like, it's just a fascinating concept, and for me, it's really never been something that, you know, I sit down and like, oh, this movie or this game's about time travel, and like get excited about that.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, it's almost, like, a little confusing at times. And, like, Radiant Historia, I feel like in the beginning it was very, a little, like, confusing until you start to eventually see how it works, right? And then with this game, with so many different eras, I remember initially I'm like, you know, your head's, you know, spinning a little bit, like, okay. But I think this game does a really nice job with, like, the, you know, obviously you get the gates, and then you sort of... learn, like, okay, these gates bring you to this time period, and you sort of get that, and then eventually you get the epoch, I believe, is that how you pronounce the epoch? Epoch,
I think.
Yeah.
The time-traveling machine that you, after you...
unless you renamed it, like, TARDIS.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. TARDIS. after you unlock the pendant, you know, sort of gets juiced up with some magical power, you can go into the future and get this, and then you can travel to any era, you know, by just jumping in the machine. But yeah, I don't know, I really liked how they sort of played with one another too at times, where like if you grabbed a chest during a certain point, you know, if you grabbed it before, then it would be open in the future, you know, so there'd be times when you would want to avoid grabbing that because you want to get the chest in the future where it's a better item, you know. So I thought just even cool little things like that were a nice elements to add within the time travel sort of idea as well.
Yeah, I think the part that made it successful was that the eras were clearly definitive. Like, you, when you were there, you pretty much knew, like... apart from the 600 AD and the 1000 AD, those are the two that were the closest. But even then, the maps were changed enough that you yeah. knew when you were, and there unique.
I think that 1000 and 600 being that close is because that's where you first see the difference. And I think they do a very good job of like, okay, yeah, like this looks very similar. But like 600 AD and 1000 AD look very similar. But there's differences because time has passed, and then that allows them to go to much farther lengths with the other times that you travel to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it's funny too. Like I remember talking to an NPC and something in 1000 AD, and they're like, "There used to be a cathedral here," but
yeah.
So yeah, like so seeing that kind of thing, and then I love that one of the gates. Or in one of the imp's house, like the cupboard of a house.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
And they just happen to be friendly, but like some of the other ones are not so nice to you.
Yeah, when you go into the shop and the guy's like, yeah, oh, I guess I'll sell to you, but it's going to be about $10,000 or 10,000 times more than I would charge anybody else.
And then you go into the center of town and they're all just sort of like doing a weird chant and like circling a statue, and you're like, what is going on right now?
And then it's fun going back at the end of the game when, I guess, I can't remember what it is, like, because Magus wasn't there or something, and so they're, like, they're not... Oh, I think it's after, like, one of the... I can't think of his name, like, the frog guy that was working with Magus in 600. If you go back and defeat him, then
Ozzy,
the village...
Ozzy. Yeah, all the dumb... Yeah. The
and
dumb names.
Wasn't there like a Slash? Was it Slash or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was after like Ozzy Osbourne, Slash, and Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers,
yeah.
I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I thought that was sort of funny.
Yeah. It's just awesome stuff like that. Like, I love that. But it was fun going back to the, like, going back into the different times after you've done stuff like that and, like, seeing the differences. And...
Yeah, how different, yeah. Actions affect different things throughout the story, but
I guess the other thing that I don't know too much about it myself, but I don't, and I'm not sure how many different endings there actually are.
I actually have a list here.
There's a whole lot of endings.
Oh, yeah, because really, I mean, the cool thing about Chrono Trigger is, and I guess this comes into effect more so with the new game plus, but you can actually jump right to Lavos the first time you get into the End of Time, right? You jump in, you can, it's like, hey, you can go to Destruction Day and go see what's up, but, like, you're gonna get wrecked.
Yeah.
And you can go do it easily. You jump in there and you can see the end boss. Probably, I mean, I don't remember exactly how many hours.
Very
it is,
early on,
but
if memory serves.
Yeah, it's like, it's within a couple hours of the beginning of the game, you can go see the end boss, but you're gonna get wrecked. But, that's what's cool about doing New Game Plus, where you sort of, you know, already all juiced up and you can go get these different endings. But I'm looking here, you've got something called Bad Ending, Ending 1. Oh, man. Yeah, so there's Ending 1, but then when you go in there, 1, 1B, 1C, 1D, 1E. Then there's Ending 2, Ending 3. So there's a whole bunch. Ending 5.
Yeah. Eight. And a lot of them, well, the best one is the one 13. Where there's, like, you go to the End of Time and it's just all the developers. And, like, they troll you, they give you information about the game. Like, I always like those goofy developers things. I remember stumbling upon that in Pokemon back in the day.
The Dream's Epilogue, I believe that one is.
Yeah.
Finish the encounter with Lavos and then finish something else.
And I know in the DS version, they added an ending that basically ties directly into Chrono Cross in a
just going to say that the Dream's Epilogue that I was just saying, the ending is a preview of Chrono Cross. The Dream devours actually Lavos after having absorbed Scala.
See, now I want to get this developer's ending.
Yeah, that's the
trolling. And
it's
super hard to get.
Yeah, it's the most difficult ending to achieve. It can only be won by defeating Lavos at the very beginning of the game, using only Chrono and possibly Marley, and defeating the double-powered Lavos. Oh, man, that sounds difficult.
That sounds like one for YouTube.
I guess that there's two endings I saw. One was Lavos defeated me, so I saw, like, the bad ending when Lavos, like, blows up the world, and everybody's like, oh, we gotta get the hell out of here. And then the other one I saw was, at first I'm like, what's going on? This, Chrono, like, wakes up in his house and they're like, yeah, so, we're going to execute you anyway. And we got to take you to the castle. And then it was all just a gag.
Oh yeah. He's just, the king was trolling you.
Yeah.
He's like, just kidding, bro. Come on down.
Yeah. I think it was like Luca or something went and, like, picked up all the people from the different generations. They're like, we're going to have a party. Cause, you know, why not?
Yeah, I love that send-off, too, when, like, you're back at the fair again, where it all started, and, like, yeah, they're all going into their proper warp gates back to their time, and they sort of send their send-off to Chrono, and it really does, it's one of those, like, oh, it's over, you know, they're going back home, and you sort of feel bad, you know, but, like, you also feel good because I don't know about you guys, but, like, I had a smile ear to ear when I was going through that whole credit scene at the end. And I was just like, I finally get, like, I get why everyone loves this game so much. Like, it is amazing. It works so well. And it's just a complete pleasure to play through.
When you guys beat it, did you have you saw the animated, like, the anime scenes at the end?
No, I didn't see it. Well, no. My initial playthrough, no. I mean,
because I had it, and the very, very final thing was a woman, and it looked like it might have been Luca, or a descendant of Luca, who discovered a baby in the forest who was wearing the pendant.
Yeah. I'm like, what? That's a Chrono Cross reference.
Oh, is that what it is?
I forgot about that one.
I was like, what? What happened?
So, like, I don't want to get there yet, but before we end this, I want to prepare you for Chrono Cross to an extent. Because it's weird.
I can't wait.
I didn't want to touch on some of the side quests that they have, because there's one that I was trying to find specifics about it, because it's been a while since the one where Robo builds the forest.
Ooh, I love that one.
Oh,
which
yeah,
is so
yeah.
good. And that's also, that's all, I mean, that's tied into the stuff with Luca saving her mom as well. Which were like those were a pair of like I love the idea that it's like oh no we just got to leave Robo here to work on the forest
and her leg gets
caught and we'll yeah well I mean you leave Robo to get in the to take care of the forest and then you just come get him like years later which is just a fun element of the fact that it's a time traveling game and then Luca the stuff where her mom gets her dress or whatever
that was
caught.
Intense
yeah. And then you can kind of like save her, and then it's a very minor thing. It's just in the ending, like, oh, she's walking now. But it's still like I like those two beats a lot, and a lot of the side quests are fun. But the Robo Forest one's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Well, the Luca Mum one, I actually didn't hit the buttons quick enough. I'm like, nope, forget this.
Yeah, I had to go.
We're
back.
Gonna be starting this one over.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing. I was like, no, I clicked on it.
Yeah. Well, I like too when you go back the Robo one where he's just like a rust heap when you go find him. And
yeah.
You wake him up and he's just like, oh, hey guys,
been a while.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You jerks, you know. Yeah. No, that yeah. was definitely my favorite side quest too.
Yeah, it was just fun to watch Robo do the work too. Like if you just stand outside and you're just watching him, like it's like Farm Simulate.
Yeah,
he's working hard.
I see David kicking back. I better have one of my beers.
Yeah,
watch right. Robo do all the work while I get all the benefit.
That's right. Like, this forest better be done by the time I get back.
Yeah. that's terrible. He's give enslaving poor robots it. To do his bidding.
Yeah, well, that's like the dream, right? That the robots do all the work, you just sit back and have a beer.
Yeah, until you don't get paid because all the robots stole your jobs.
Yeah.
And then you
they
can't afford the beer. I'm
trying to remember the other one. There might have to actually look up the I remember doing them, but now
what, the side quests?
Yeah,
I mean there's the one with Frog tying in with oh god,
oh
what's it?
Yeah,
with Glenn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
no, that? He is Glenn.
Yeah, he is Glenn. Cyrus. Yeah,
yeah.
There's that one where you recharge the sunstone.
Yeah, that's the Luca one, right?
When you go back to the future and then you fight the AI that created Robo.
That one was Mother Brain.
Yeah, that one was tough, if I remember correctly. Or at
and
least
his
I
girlfriend,
had trouble with
too.
It. I'm trying to
his
think.
His girlfriend
what other
who's gone awry. Like, I forget her name. It's someone that's like from the Prometheus myth.
Hunting. Was there a hunting one? Destroying my
I mean,
brain,
there's the Magus one where Magus basically confronts his old gang.
Yeah, I see that one, yep. Stopping Ozzy, repairing the grave, stopping the spread of the desert, and then finding the rainbow shell. That was all in the Middle Ages. Then you got putting Cyrus' spirit to rest and discovering the true form of the Masamune. Repairing Luca's past, which was her mother, right? Finding the treasures of Zeal. In the forest runes.
The dude that stole the stun stone?
Yep. Destroying Mother Brain, finding the moonstone, hunting in the hunting grounds, searching for Melquire's hidden labs in Anquit. Yeah, I think that looks like. Then they give you the side quest for Chrono Cross, but save that one for another podcast. Yeah.
Gotta definitely do those side quests though. You don't want to miss those. Like they were all great. Like none of them felt like work. They're all worth it. They were all worth it.
Yeah, they added just enough, like, little bits to the story that, like you said, while I think the main reason was, like, they're like, we need to give these items to sort of boost up the player, you know, for going into Lavos. But like you said, it never felt like a true slog or anything. Like, oh, I need to go do these things to get these items. It was giving you enough story and enough of a purpose to do them that, yeah, they felt really nice. And then all of a sudden, you're coming off all those sort of feel-good, like, stuff like, all right, powered up, did these cool things, saved Luca's mom, you know, Robo, you know, David's got his jollies off watching his poor robot slave, and now we can go kill Lavos. <That's right.
laughs> It almost felt like the developers like, I guess we should make it grind, but why don't we make it fun?
Yeah, and I wish more games were like that, that gave you that option to, like, really boost up and power yourself up by doing something that isn't just, you know, a tedious grind sesh, even though I don't personally mind, you know, as long as it's not grinding too much, I don't mind a nice session of grinding, but it was nice when it didn't feel like a grind at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything else we should discuss before Neil takes us into the transition?
Into the chrono?
I mean, what? All right. If this isn't your favorite RPG, what's above it?
Oh my god. That's a loaded question.
Like, if I were to work on a list, and I could probably dig up some old, like, what my top 100 games of all time were in, like, 2012. But, like, this is probably a top 10 or top 20 at worst game of all time for me. I mean, it's tremendous. I think it's a, if you were to show people to be like, all right, check out this RPG from the 90s, this is representative of what was so cool about these games back then. I feel like Chrono Trigger is the go-to game for that. Like, if you, like, I think that some of the Final Fantasy games might have, you know, like, they're not as immediately apparent as us. I think this just, it gets you in, it's deep, there's a lot to it, it flows very nicely. I mean, it's a beautiful, magical game, and For me to answer my question of if this isn't your favorite RPG, what's better? The only couple that really come to mind are Super Mario RPG for purely nostalgic reasons, because that was the game that kind of got me both deeper into video games and deeper into RPGs. I'd also put probably right above or in line with Chrono Trigger would be like Final Fantasy VI.
I still need to play that game.
I can't think of too many other ones than that. I'm trying to think of more modern games. Like, there's a lot of modern RPGs that I think are very good. I just don't think any of them are better than Chrono Trigger. And I will always and forever make cracks about how Chrono Cross is better than Trigger, but that's not true at all. I mean, Chrono Cross is a beautiful disaster of a game, and I adore it to death.
Yeah, like, Chrono Trigger, to me, it's, if you're an RPG fan, and having now played it for the first time at my age, I can definitely say that it's a game that you have to play if you're into RPGs. Like, if you haven't played it yet, you need to play it. Like, it's just, it's definitely on my list of, like, if I had a list of games you had to play before you died as an RPG fan, it would definitely be on it.
It's on the essential list.
It's definitely an essential. And I would have it in it's so, personally, it's tough to place it somewhere. Like, if I tried to look at it objectively, it probably would be in my top five games, just because it just has every, like, it has good chemistry, it has good pacing, it has a great battle system, and the only thing it doesn't have is nostalgia, because I literally played it last month. That's really, like, the only thing that affects, like, because I think of games that I enjoy more, and people would think I'm crazy, because it's, like, I have a lot of affinity for, like, a bunch of Final Fantasies that other people probably wouldn't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, eight.
Eight and one. Like, if somebody said, what are your favorite Final Fantasies, I'd go 8, 1, 9.
Weirdo.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see liking one from, like, you played it a lot when you were younger, but, like, I think one's a janky ass game now.
I still play it now.
weirdo.
But is that because it's because you know it frontwards and backwards?
Yeah.
Like, well, I feel like if you were reviewing a game that was designed like Final Fantasy I now, you would tear it to shreds.
Oh, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, that's my thing, is that, like, yeah, like, I've talked with people about Super Mario RPG, and they don't like it as much, and I'm like, nah, I get it, but, like, I played this game a dozen times between the age of 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Like...
Yeah, it holds a special place in your heart.
Yeah.
That for me, it's like, I could think of, like you said, games that I like better than Chrono Trigger. Like, again, this, most people would look at me and be like, what are you talking about? It's like, I like Xenoblade Chronicles 2 better than Chrono Trigger. Now, I understand completely that Chrono Trigger would be objectively a better game. Like, because there's things in Xenoblade 2 that are just, like, asinine, you know? Like I've mentioned,
I think all
skills.
Yeah, I think every Monolith Soft game has about, like, 30 to 40 hours more content than it needs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and it's like...
I think those... On the whole, Monolith Soft, very good at making video games, not very good at making short video games.
Oh, no, no. And it, funny, the other game I would say would be like a Persona Golden, Persona 4 Golden. Like, that game, it was one of the, like, I didn't know too much going into it about Persona, and I just absolutely fell in love. And that was, it's not very often that I finish a game and, like, have a desire to play more of it. You know, I'm usually like, okay, I've said my piece, you know, I'm done with it. It was good. I enjoyed it. Whatever. Especially a long one like Persona, and it, like, that was one where I had other games to play, so I didn't. But, like, I had to talk myself down from, like, starting up another file. You know, I was like, let's do something different. But yeah, I mean, as far as Chrono Trigger, it's just, it doesn't have many, like, flaws to it. The pacing, yeah, like you said, is it probably the best paced RPG that I've ever played. It's got a great cast of characters. Battle system's fun. Story's great. It's just, like, everything's... Like I said, like, I know the other games I listed have flaws. And so if you were grading them on a review scale, sure, they might not score as well as a Chrono Trigger would. But as far as personal preference, you know. And like you said, I have the nostalgic draws to it, as in that it's... I've always had it, you know, and it's always been that game, like... Oh, I know it's amazing, but I have never gotten around to actually finishing, you know? So, having just beaten it more recent, I don't have that as strong as nostalgic feel as maybe many people do. But, I mean, like David said, absolute essential, a must-play for any RPG fan. And honestly, I'd say it's such a good game, and it does everything so well that even if you're not traditionally an RPG fan... It still has a lot to offer, and it would be a good glimpse into the world of an RPG if, you know, that's not really something you do all that often. It flows so well, and I think that's usually in RPGs, like Neil said, too long, it dragged on too long, or, oh yeah, like, you know, 80% of it was fun, but, like, there's 20%, you know, which equates to 10 to 15 hours that, you know, or just, you know, like, I could have done without that. The Chrono Trigger, there's not one part of that game where you look at it and you're like, oh, I wish that wasn't in there.
It just kicks.
Yeah. Well, a good example of that is, like, Xander with the site. Somehow he's gone throughout his life without playing an RPG. I have no idea how. But he had said, like, I want to get into an RPG. Yeah, he's like, I want to get into an RPG, what should I play? And it was just, like, a just immediate reaction, Chrono Trigger.
For real. It, like you said, it's a game that works for anybody.
If that's your first, that's probably the best.
You can hang up your RPG boots after that.
Yeah.
Or, like, if you don't like it that much, then maybe this genre isn't for you.
Maybe you're dumb.
Yeah, it is. It is a good litmus test for if you should be playing RPGs or not, really. Like, if you can't enjoy Chrono Trigger, then you're probably not gonna... Like, traditional RPGs, anyway. Like, maybe you might get into something like Fallout or something, but...
I was gonna say there's some sort of Patreon joke to make, but I won't.
Yeah, turn-based... if you're going for a turn-based RPG, the Chrono Trigger is where to start. But yeah, I guess... And that's the other thing, is to me, a successful RPG is one that... I want to, where I finish the game and I immediately want to play it again. And that's definitely, like, Chrono Trigger had that feeling, like, oh, I could play this again.
And
if there wasn't a million, if there wasn't a million Switch games, I'd play this again.
Yeah, if you weren't reviewing and playing, you know, 13 RPGs simultaneously, you know, there might be room. Yeah.
Well, that's I had to put P5 down because I'm like, oh man, this isn't going to happen. Like, I got Persona. It's funny that you've mentioned Persona 4 because I'm partway through that. I'm at the Yukiko Shadow right now.
Okay, yeah, I forget where I'm at. I haven't played that game.
So it's
so long.
It's pretty early. It's like the I guess the first major dungeon. Because like I went through and fought the shadow for Yosuke and Chia, and now it's like saving the first person that was pushed into the TV.
Oh, okay, yep,
yeah. It gets so good. Oh, it's so good. And the humor in it is hilarious. Like they're the first time they're in the TV, and the Yosuke has to use the bathroom. And he's like, I'm just gonna piss here, man.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. We're
I just
in the
cracked
TV.
Up laughing. Yeah, so I had that on the go, and then Regalia, writing the review tomorrow for that one. So that was my Switch RPG, kind of falling off the Ni No Kuni wagon.
Weren't you guys gonna be doing an episode of that? You were so excited for it.
we were excited for it.
PAX destroyed
stuff
that.
Happened.
You know what? It's just. RPGs on like a stationary console on the TV, man. It just,
yep.
I came home from PAX and then it was like, oh, I got a few things here and there. And then now, you know, South Park I'm working on. And it's just, I don't have the time to be sitting around a PS4 anymore, you know?
I think part of it too is, the momentum because, like I don't mind like, cause P5, I could only play on the PS4 and I went through that fine, and it was a terrific playthrough. But I think what killed me on Ni No Kuni was that there too much time passed from like one play to the next, where it was like, okay, I'm really busy these 3 or 4 days, so I can't get to it. And then all of a sudden, like it's kind of in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and then you're like, well, what exactly was I doing? Yeah.
Yeah, hard to get back into, and then it's like, and then. At the time I was playing, like I had to review Earthlock and then Regalia came right after it. So I was like, oh, I'm just not getting back into Ni No Kuni right now. And now it's kind of just, I don't know.
She gone. Sorry, Evan, you know, you're going to have to, you know, deal with that yourself, I guess. But yeah.
Cool. Well, do you want to sell us on Chrono Cross, to finish up our session here?
I guess so.
I only ask that it be somewhat, not like too short, you know, but just, it's getting a little late. I gotta finish South Park.
Yeah. I know. So the thing with Chrono Cross is that it's a sequel to Chrono Trigger, but it's not a sequel to Chrono Trigger. Mm. In that, like, so you reference the ending where they just show, like, Luca picking up, like, a baby with a pendant on. Like, that does kind of play into Chrono Cross in a way, but in sort of that, like, in the world of Chrono Cross, there are characters from Chrono Trigger that do show up. Like, for example, like, Luca is mentioned, among other references that tie into the greater fabric of the game. And there are elements of the world that will seem very familiar, but it's just, it's its own thing. And the own thing that it is, kind of, instead of time, it's interdimensions. So there's basically like a standard world and then an alternate world. And there's a plot point that you stumble on pretty early that is basically the catalyst for these two drastically different worlds. And with that, I think it takes a lot of the ideas of Chrono Trigger, but kind of puts it through a fuzzy, way too convoluted PlayStation 1 RPG. It has a battle system that is really weird and unique. And then it has this part where you can have, like, there are, like, 40 different characters that you can recruit, and, like, recruiting some at different points will make it so you can't recruit other ones points. And that's the difference between, like, the early parts of the game could be super easy because you have this one more stronger character, but by doing that, you do not have the option of getting a stronger character later on.
Oh, no, yeah. Do they sort of make that obvious, or is it not
I think it could be more obvious. Played through this game all the way through for the first time with the help of on game FAQs. I do not know if it's still there. There is a spoiler-free walkthrough that's just basically like, you have the option for this character this time. I found that really useful because then it helped me get over the agita of like, who am I missing? Yeah, can I get this chef character? Can they join my I don't know. Because usually when they like, the game makes it a little obvious when it's a character that can join your party because it's like, oh, like, they're named. They got way more animation than everybody else. I wonder if that character can join my party. But like, the degree of characters that you can get are absurd. There's basically a dude that just looks like Olimar that can join your party. It's so weird. And it does some batty things narratively, both in like flipping the world of the game on its ear about halfway through. And then the tie-ins that it does have to the Chrono Trigger story will probably piss you off. But it's like, it don't take it too seriously. It's just a video game. I don't know. I love Chrono Cross.
Does it just seem like almost too ambitious so weird. For its own
yeah.
good?
I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it was going in deeper on it, and whenever we do the Thirsty Mage episode on Chrono Cross, we can go into it in more detail. But like Masato Kato, who was just the writer on Chrono Trigger, he might have done more. I don't want to like be like, oh, all he did was write the story. He might have done more on the game, but like he was kind of the main person that worked on Chrono Trigger. That worked on Chrono Cross. He was the director. He wrote the scenario. That was all him. So yeah, so Kato just had this crazy idea to do Chrono Cross. And it kind of, I want to say there's probably quotes out there from like Sakaguchi and other people who worked on Chrono Trigger that are like, we don't know what this guy was doing. but yeah, I would definitely call Chrono Cross as a beautiful disaster of a video game, but it's near and dear to my heart.
Well, I'm definitely up for it because I did check to make sure it is available on Vita.
Yeah.
And now that I went out and bought a Vita just to play Chrono Trigger, I really need to put more games on it now.
Oh no, yeah. I don't even know.
That's probably how I would. If I were to replay it, I would probably do it on Vita.
Oh, I guess I got to buy another Vita.
Yeah. Or yeah, I mean I got a PlayStation 1 copy I could lend you.
Yeah, I do have a PS1 somewhere.
But yeah, Chrono Trigger is fantastic. It's amazing. And if you really want more Chrono Trigger, try Cross. It's not gonna, like, you're fed, but you'll still be hungry.
I thought about making that joke when we did our little greetings in the beginning, but then I was like, I probably shouldn't. But I'm glad we got one in there. I think it worked out much better when talking about Chrono Cross.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I guess it's a good time to wrap it up there, and just to let everyone know to if you're listening on either the Thirsty Mage or NWR Connectivity, make sure you subscribe to both. So this is on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. You can get lots of great more RPG content straight to the device. So make sure that you're signed up for both. You can also check us out on Twitter. I need to start doing a little bit more of the... I was doing a bit of the tidbits, the little factoids that you can tweet out. Also let you know when episodes are upcoming. And then we're doing discussions on Reddit. There's a subreddit that's just called The Thirsty Mage. So come join us there and we can take the discussion to the public. Offline over at Reddit if you want to add your experiences in or add to the discussion that we had tonight. And also I'm sure anyone listening to this is probably already signed up for both Talk Nintendo with Casey and Radio Free Nintendo with the NWR. The Nintendo World Report has tons of great podcasts that you should be listening to all of them. And also to check out the site for tons of other content, reviews, videos, check out NWR TV. There's tons of content to take you throughout the whole week, whether you're in your car or at work. So
amen.
Subscribe.
Yeah.
Come check out it all.
Woo!
So want to thank Casey and Neil for joining me tonight.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah. Oh, Always a fun time.
Yeah, and we'll likely all be back together in a month or so for SMT Strange Journey.
Woo-wee! We're in for a doozy, I think, but it should be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, my heart skipped a couple beats when somebody told me how long the game was.
It's a very long game.
We'll likely have Siren with us for that one, too, since she's the SMT expert.
Sorry, yep. Nino Cooney, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Nino Cooney might be like Matt Damon is to the Kimmel Show there. Well, we wanted to have Nina Cooney here tonight, but we've ran late, so maybe next week.
that'll be our going joke.
Stay tuned for Nino Tooney. Thirsty Mage.
Nino Tooney. Is that your new currency in Canada now? The Nino Tooney.
The Nino Tooney.
Nino Tooney. And it has, oh, I can't even remember the little dude that I love so much. What's his name now? The latte that throws boogers at dice.
Oh my god, what was his name? Oh, Lofty. Man.
Lofty, that's right. I would totally pay money to have a Nino Tooney with the picture of Lofty on the front.
Yeah, when Lofty is the main star.
Yeah, Lofty replaces the queen on our Tooney.
Our Tooney. Oh, that's so good.
All right. Well, I just want to thank everyone for listening and tune in soon. And I'm sure we'll have a new episode in a couple weeks. So everyone, have a great night.
Poodles.
Bye.